Teams everywhere are dealing with a serious problem, a productivity problem. It's no secret, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Most tech is too complicated, there are too many time-consuming tasks, and teams aren't getting the info they need to close deals and connect with customers. Don't worry, though. HubSpot's customer platform can help. It was built to save time and make your job easier so you can get back to building your business. No more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. No more chasing down prospect info. No more one system for this, another system for that. HubSpot can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them to customers, all in one place. Plus, HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you so you can focus more on scaling your business. Because HubSpot knows you have some big growth goals, and they're here to make your productivity problem no problem at all. Visit HubSpot.com to learn how they can help you grow better.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, April 9th. I'm Ben Berkley here with Rob Litters, and this is the Hustle Daily Show. Today, we're going to dig into a story that sits right at the crossroads of our hearts, which is where the very, very broken financial model of journalism meets the very, very opportunistic world of short-selling hedge funds. Is it okay if journalists investigate a company and let their investor friends then short that company before hitting publish? It's happening, and it's kind of making our heads spin. So we're going to tell you a lot more about that in a bit. But first, let's run down the stories making headlines today in business and tech. Coming off of yesterday's eclipse, we can't start anywhere but with the queen of the solar event, Bonnie Tyler. Her hit track, Total Eclipse of the Heart, which is somehow more than 40 years old, lit up the charts all over again, as expected. We don't yet know how much she pocketed, but U.S. searches of the song surged 50% on Spotify over the last week. You know, it rose to be the second most purchased song on iTunes. It has climbed like 30 spots per day over the weekend on the charts and spiked on Google Trends, which makes sense because this is what happened last time in 2017 with the eclipse. I think we saw that her downloads on that song increased more than 500%. So with all that said, Rob, we're looking at Bonnie's eclipse profit engine. Let's also bring in Mariah Carey's Christmas cash cow. And it's kind of making us think, how can we own a significant day with a song? Like, what's left for us?
Your idea was leap day.
Yes.
The day that comes at the end of February once every 4 years. And I honestly think that's absolutely genius. Some pop star should write something that's thematically tied to leap year and it'll just blow up once every 4 years. It'll be like the Olympics for songs.
We've seen it over and over again. If you align yourself with a specific event or known for being the soundtrack of that event, you're going to make so much money.
Like Mariah Carey, man.
Yeah.
Every Christmas, it's coming right back.
Moving on, if you like the idea of a private equity company as your landlord, you're going to be thrilled to hear that Blackstone is really just snatching up apartments left and right. They acquired the massive landlord Air Communities for $10 billion in cash. They are really all in on this business. They said they're going to pour $400 million into Air's portfolio. And we're just very recently removed from Blackstone also acquiring Tricon, which is another huge landlord, for $3.5 billion. I mean, call me cynical. I don't think this is their altruistic move to solve the housing crisis.
No, I think you're onto something there too, Ben.
Yeah, thank you. I really brought it today.
Bringing the investigative journalism chops. I love it.
Someone else who really brought it, and maybe too much, JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon, he released his annual shareholder letter. It's truly the ultimate LinkedIn thought leadership post, but it's like 61 pages long, so it wouldn't fit on LinkedIn. It covered a lot of ground. You know, it defended his company's DEI policies, and it hyped AI as being basically on par with the advent of electricity. And, you know, obviously just got into like a lot of geopolitical opinions. Ukraine on their side, China not on their side. Political division, not a fan of it. Kind of exactly what you'd expect. Obviously got really into the weeds on banking policy. But to me, it feels like it's more to his benefit than to his company's. Rob, do you think this is a good or productive practice to write this letter every year?
Yeah, I love the annual letter practice if done well. Like, I think Warren Buffett is kind of like the patron saint of the annual letter. Jeff Bezos did annual letters when he was the CEO of Amazon. And the thing I really liked about Bezos's letters is they're really short. Like, he was really, really succinct. And he like actually understood the idea of brevity. 61 pages, in my opinion, is way too long. That's like a novella. That's not a shareholder letter.
Yeah.
There has to be a cutoff at which point you can no longer call it a letter.
When you are in danger of it being called a manifesto, I feel like that's your sign to reel it in a little bit. Yeah. But at the same time, people are talking about JP Morgan Chase.
Exactly.
Let's go from just this one billionaire to 15 others. Each one of the 15 billionaires on Forbes' 2024 list of billionaires actually inherited their wealth. There are no self-made billionaires to be found here, which hopefully will keep your self-loathing down a little bit. There was nothing you could have done to top them. Just all the Nepo babies are lining up on the list.
Once you learn that somebody, you know, inherited billions of dollars, it's very easy to kind of scratch them off a list. It's like, oh, okay, well, like, I can't compete with that. It's like giving them kind of like a cheat code.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about another potential billionaire in the making is probably anyone who works at Shutterstock right now, because they are loving the AI gold rush. You know, Shutterstock is a stock image giant, and they have made deals with quite a list: Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, and OpenAI to train AI models on the Shutterstock image library. Each one of those deals started between $25 and $50 million, and it seems like most of them have expanded in scope. So
huge.
Wow, that's a nice surprise stream for them to come in just out of nowhere.
It really makes me wonder if any of these companies kind of had any idea that this AI gold rush was coming. I mean, this training data, obviously so valuable for these LLMs, you know, from Google, OpenAI, everyone that you just mentioned. It's really crazy. I wonder, first of all, how much of this was expected from companies like Shutterstock. And I think Adobe is another one. Mm-hmm. I also wonder how long this can go on for. There has to be a certain point when they don't need to train these models on the same images anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that window is actually already closing. So like Shutterstock getting paid now, good call. You know, I think last week in the Wall Street Journal, there was even an article that was saying there's only so much quality data to train these AI models. And some of the researchers quoted that were saying they think the supply of that good data is going to run out in the next 2 years. So I suppose if you are a company that has a lot of good training material, get that data deal now and make some money.
Right now. Stop listening to this podcast and go make that deal.
Well, stop listening after our main segment.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun one. So that main segment is going to center on a freshly launched news site, actually, called Hunterbrook Media. So it debuted last week with an explosive and actually really well-reported piece of investigative journalism, which called out the practices of United Wholesale Mortgage, America's top mortgage lender. But here's the twist. Hunterbrook Media is an associated arm of Hunterbrook Capital, a hedge fund, and that hedge fund is taking a look at each of the journalistic arm's articles before publication and making investments accordingly before the piece goes live. So in this case, Hunterbrook shorted UWM, which is the target of this story, and then knowing that it would be damaged by this story, took a long position on its bitter rival Rocket to the point of even staking itself into a class action suit against UWM. And then once those investments were made, the Hunterbrook story went live and definitely did some damage to UWM stock in the process. And it just makes you feel weird. So Rob, how does it make you feel?
Yeah, this is definitely kind of a strange take. And I think this hits kind of close to home for you, right? Because isn't UWM's CEO the owner of your favorite professional basketball team?
It's true. Yeah, I definitely think about him in a different light based on this story, which was, again, really well done. Like, these are really top flight journalists, which then also just kind of adds that tension coming from a journalism side of like, okay, they're doing this great work, but the way of funding it feels odd. Like, yeah. Like you have that first visceral thing of like, is that legal?
Yeah, it feels kind of insider tradery, right?
A little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting because the article outlines a few examples of this already happening. So Hindenburg Research is one that employs a similar model. Mark Cuban, I think, has a company called Share Sleuth that's been doing the same thing since 2006. I think the difference with those is they're positioned more as kind of short selling first and journalism second. But that's not really the case with Hunterbrook, which really presents itself more as an independent journalism arm. So I actually recently read a book by a journalist about a hedge fund. This just naturally made me think of this. Very different, but so I read this book called The Fund, which is about Ray Dalio, Bridgewater Associates, and it's written by a journalist. And just based on that book, this doesn't surprise me at all, because I think hedge funds are ruthless and they're willing to do this sort of stuff. So the idea that they're kind of willing to break the fourth wall of media and kind of build that into their business model, it doesn't really surprise me. I do think we kind of have this utopian vision of media being completely separate from money, politics, everything like that. And it's been very rare, I think, over the last century that that's actually been the case. Media and politics and money have been interlinked forever. But to answer your question in a more succinct manner, it definitely makes me feel a little icky, Ben.
Yeah, it's also, it makes me feel weird because it's smart. Like, it's just like, oh, good move. Like, it's really clever, this idea that where it differs from these other firms that have done this work is that the more that they lean into the journalism and the more that that kind of adds like the gravitas of their site and just like the reputation of them as journalists should actually pack more punch when they come at a company and do more damage, which will then make them more money. But it also then calls into question just that, as someone who spent time in journalism schools, like, they hit you over the head with objectivity.
Yeah.
It is really hard to maintain your objectivity when your livelihood is entirely based on doing as much damage as possible to your target. And so it's a really interesting thing. And something that was noted is just, this is two industries that they need something.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it together. And, you know, journalists need any way of making money to do what they do. Very challenging everywhere in media.
Totally.
But then on the other side, you know, hedge funds, they are trying to limit their risk, and they know pretty definitively, like, this is really good actionable intel for them to stake out their positions. So it is a good marriage, but I don't know, they have to be really careful, because if you are using insider information that you dig up in the process, then you can't really profit off of it without being in trouble. It's got to be a really disciplined organization to pull this off. It's just fascinating.
Where does the line start for insider information? If you're at a company like HubSpot, we have different trading windows and stuff like that, where, like, we're not really allowed to touch our stock because there are risks of insider trading, right? Like, they just kind of like take that out of employees' hands and like don't allow employees to trade stock in particular windows. And obviously there are like all sorts of best practices and stuff like that too, to make sure that people aren't doing that. But if a company like the New York Times was doing an investigation into like some tech company and they found something super nefarious, and they knew as soon as that headline hit and as soon as it published that the stock would take a dip, how would people react if the Times executive team found a way to benefit from that? Like, I think people would feel pretty weird about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The quote that really sticking with me was from a Neiman Lab article that just said, this is one of the most unusual experiments in media ethics.
Yeah, it's perfectly put.
And it's gonna just be really interesting to watch it play out. You know, they tease, they have a lot of other stories coming up with a very wide ranging list of targets, it would seem. So both wishing them well and gonna just kind of continue to feel weird about it as I wish them well.
Yeah, actually, like, this article is making me want to sign up for Hunter Brooks newsletter or whatever it is that they have, because I want to get the scoop.
Just want to know how this very strange marriage works out. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for tuning into the Hustle Daily Show. Head to the link in the description of this podcast to vote for us to win a Webby Award. That would be really nice of you to do. Thank you in advance. We are a proud part of the HubSpot Podcast Network. Our editor today is Robert Hartwig, and our executive producer is Darren Clark. We've got a lot more tech and business coverage in our newsletter. If you're not subscribed, go get yourself signed up at thehustle.co/email, and we will see you tomorrow.
Hey, everybody, this great new podcast just came out, and I can't wait to tell you about it. It's called The Next Wave, AI and the Future of Technology, and it's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. And of course, it's brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. You can catch The Next Wave with Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands, who are leading AI creators who are your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is a bit fragmented, but The Next Wave strives to be the leading podcast on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. You can listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.